everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Entree Pastors Podcast. This is a Saturday replay edition where we are bringing back one of our most downloaded episodes from the early days of the podcast. And the title of this episode is Balancing Contentment and Ambition in Ministry and Business with our guest, Scott Kramer. So I want you to think about those words, contentment and ambition. Like, it's almost like there's a tension between those two words. On one hand, there's a desire to build and to grow and to multiply and increase. And on the other side, there's this pull to like be satisfied and content with where you are. And, you know, how far in one direction or the other should one lean? What's the healthy balance between those two? And that applies certainly to church life, ministry life. We can get out of balance there where we are either way too complacent or much of the time we're on the other side of it, really ambitious, really motivated to see things growing, and we're frustrated if things aren't moving in the direction that we want to see them and as fast as we'd like to see them. And also in business, the same is true, man. Like, well, how do you strike that balance? Well, you're going to hear in this conversation we had with Scott Kramer quite a while back, both of those themes come up in ministry context as well as business. And there's a powerful story that we ask Scott to share toward the end of our conversation that we had with him that I just know will resonate with the hearts of so many pastors. So I'm going to get out of the way quickly so we can just get right to the conversation. So without any further ado, listen to this past interview that we did with our friend Scott Kramer. Here we go. Well, Scott, it is an honor to have you as a guest on the Entree Pastors Podcast, man. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. I love what you guys are doing through Entree Pastors, and it's just an honor.
Yeah. You know, Les and I talk about this often, but sometimes when we meet like one of our people, we just know, like within minutes of talking to them, we're like, oh, they get us, we get them, they're in our tribe. And certainly Les and I both felt that way about you. Recently, you went through our 4-day challenge to a profitable business idea, or 4 days to a profitable business idea challenge would probably be the better way to say that. But in that week, those 4 days of spending some time with you, we just were like, we got to share your story, and really got to enjoy hearing what you're doing in the world. So again, I've been looking forward to unpacking this in front of our audience and letting them learn from you. So why don't we start by just a little introduction? Tell us about where you are in the world and the work that you do. How did you get involved in pastoral ministry? And then we'll build from there.
Yeah. So for me, I grew up in the family business. I was always kind of business-minded, entrepreneurial, just kind of mindset. So I was in the family glass business in Galesburg, Illinois for many years. And then we started going to a church that was about an hour away. And I'm going to give you the short version of this story. And just over the course of a couple of years, we realized, man, we're just kind of driving by our neighbors. They won't join us at church. There was a lot of great things happening at this church. And so I sent an email to the senior pastor at the time, and I just said, Galesburg, multi-site, pray about it. Now, I hadn't met him, didn't know him. And I was really just kind of like, well, I'll slide a letter under that door, and then let's really focus on what does it look like for our family to do church within our community. And he replied within 24 hours and said, I've been praying about the same thing. Let's talk. Wow. Over the course of about a year, we had some conversations. He said, hey, I'm going to get the elders together. Let's you pull some people together that are kind of like you and might be thinking along the same lines, and let's talk. And so we did. We met at a little pizza place, and we had that conversation. One thing led to another, and it turned into an invitation, kind of a recruiting away from family business. He said, I want you to be the campus pastor of this work. We're going to do it. We're going for it. Will you be the campus pastor? I had no idea what that meant. If I had, I would have said no immediately. but had I said no, I would have missed out on some incredible years of ministry. So became the campus pastor, and we launched the Galesburg Northwoods Community Church campus, which was a multi-site. We dropped the screen, and whoever was preaching on the Peoria campus was looked like he was on our stage. We had live worship. We had volunteers. So I kind of led that campus for 5 years and then transitioned into a multi-site director role where we launched a few more multi-sites. But that was kind of my introduction into ministry. I'm incredibly thankful that they were willing to share their stage with. Really, when I said yes to that, I thought I'd be shoveling the sidewalks and holding the doors. I had no idea that it would develop a storytelling type gift and communicating type opportunities. I was scared to death to talk in front of other people. And so I remember that first Sunday, we had no idea if there would be, you know, 50 people or 100 people. And so we launched on an Easter Sunday and there were 650 people.
Unreal.
I just remember, what did I get myself into?
Well, I want to pause here just real quick because one of the parts of your story I think that resonates with me so much is I used to live in Peoria. So when I met you and you're in Galesburg, if people aren't familiar, you know, that's 45 minutes away, something like that from Peoria. So what I didn't realize till just now, I don't think I knew this part of your story. So I always just assumed, okay, Northwoods Church, they're a larger church in Peoria. Now they have a multi-site campus in Galesburg. I just figured that was part of their vision, but you were the catalyst for that. Like you reached out to the pastor who you didn't really know that much and said, hey, think about this. And you're the reason that they put a campus in Galesburg, Illinois.
Well, maybe. He was actually reading a book at the time called Multi-Site Revolution. Mm-hmm. You might be familiar with that.
Yep, read it.
And so he was going through that book at that time. And so I think God just had a plan. And
yeah, I mean, obviously,
it was an incredible partnership for many years.
Right. God's behind all of it and he gets the glory. But I guess I didn't realize the strategic role that you played in all of that. And yeah, for our listeners, it's a larger church. So to open your doors as a multi-site campus with 600 people on day one, that's pretty cool, man. And but you left.
It was fun.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was going to say from 640, I successfully grew that all the way down to 200.
Praise
in
God.
The first 6 months, but no, we ended up going to two services and then to three services. And there was many people came to Christ, lots of baptisms. It was a really rich season, you know, where you just strike while the iron's hot and you get to kind of sit back and just thank God that you get to be a part of that.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that's awesome. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing present day, you know, church-wise, and then we'll kind of shift things into more of the business marketplace side of things.
So about 4 years ago, there was a transition where they shifted vision from multi-site to church planting. And so that wasn't really my expertise. So that was about 4 years ago, a couple of years ago. So after that, I kind of went into real estate. My dad was a realtor. He was getting ready to retire. I said, hey, Dad, before you retire, show me the ropes, teach me everything you know. And so we teamed up and he's still going strong. We enjoy working together. And about 2 years ago, a little country church, not far from where we live, they were running about 20 people. And I had sold a house to a young pastor and his wife. And I remember telling my wife, hey, if he ever plants a church, I think we should go help him. Like his heart, he's so humble. And so he was the interim at this little Methodist church. They had just left the Methodist denomination. And so we kind of went to just kind of support him. One thing led to another. He didn't want to be a senior pastor at that church and went back to his church. And so that little church asked if I would be willing. And so we prayed about it and said yes. And it's the other side of the coin to mega church. I mean, we're talking rural community. We don't keep attendance, but there's still some empty seats. It's less than 100 people and we absolutely love it. There are people, farmers, teachers, it's right in our community. There are neighbors. They're the kids that my kids go to school with. So that's where we're at right now. And so I'm the senior pastor there until they find somebody that knows what they're doing. But we're having fun, just loving people, and it's really good, really healthy.
I was going to make a joke that you were in the wrong place at the wrong time and, you know, wound up as the pastor of a church. I've heard that story many times before, so sometimes got to be careful.
Hey, John.
Right. Yeah.
I want to insert a thought here just from what Scott just said and the way that he said it. A little bit of background. Scott, I mean, you and I have had several conversations about other projects that you have going on in addition to those that we've had about your marketplace world. I wanted to lean in just a little bit to something that was subtle, maybe in what you just said or the way that you said it, but I guess it's the absence of stress in your voice just now when you talked about the size of your congregation. Okay. So follow with me here. And John knows where I'm going with this. You're an ambitious dude. Like you're not lazy. You're not passive. Nothing about you are those things. But the fact that you can have peace that your church is where they need to be, that's where they are. You're certainly not opposed to new families and congregations and converts and baptisms, but the fact that you can say that with as much peace as you just said it and not be anxious or wringing your hands, they can't, especially about the fact that they wouldn't be able to maybe pay you or resource you and your family at the level that you would like to be if that was your only source or only means of survival, only source of income. The fact that you live the kind of life that you do, now we're kind of transitioning into that entree pastor part, but the fact that you lean into that life, I hear exactly what you're saying. There are some things that are provided by a congregation that would be considered smaller by some. I'm using my words real carefully because that's still not a small group of people. I mean, that's a lot of folks there, a lot of families. So I just wanted to speak to that though. And then John, you can weigh in as well, that the fact that you can have peace about where you are right there and that that's not keeping you awake, that that's not making you wring your hands, that says a whole lot about you being at the place that God has you right now.
Yeah, that's good. I guess the only thing I would add to that is just that you're not seeing a small church as a problem that needs to be solved. Again, not that you don't desire to see God's kingdom grow, but you're not viewing it, whether it's financially in terms of your own income or, you know, just the status of being in ministry and leading a small church as, well, this is a problem that needs to be fixed. So go ahead, you can respond to that.
Well, and one more thing. The reason that I'm pointing that out is because I know that there are a lot of people who listen to us who were pastoring churches with, say, a weekly attendance of 300 to 500 a couple of years ago, and now it's 100 to 150. And they're beating themselves up and they're wondering, what am I going to do? And it could be through nothing that they've done or not done. You know what I mean? I mean, a lot of it's a major cultural paradigm shift. There are some things that we can do leadership wise to respond to that. But I love the fact that you can still be faithful to your calling without being distracted by a lot of stress and anxiety and pressure that shouldn't be put on the leader.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation. I would say, coming from the business world into ministry, like I did, that transition was so fast. I didn't know any different. I didn't know any better. And so I just applied the business model and the metrics to ministry. And so I lived in that world for 8 years where there's a scoreboard in the hallway and the team sees it, and it's a whiteboard. And so you have a 5-week running average, and are you trending up, and are you adding to the yes packets that went out? Are you adding to the baptisms? And man, I tell you, towards the end of my 8 years, boy, my soul was feeling it. Like it's great. It's energizing when it's trending up and to the right. And you know that, right. But when it plateaus or when it dips, man, I tell you, if you live and die by that scoreboard, it's a painful place to reside for certain seasons. And that was the case for me. And it wasn't that we had plateaued because we were planting more campuses, but it was just the continual measuring of the numbers that, you know, it just started to wear on my soul a little bit. And so when you have that experience and you come into a rural setting where, I just said, I don't want to keep attendance. Like, it doesn't matter. I'm going to love the people in the room. I am not going to live and die on this weekly roller coaster of who's there, who's not there. And it, you know, when it dips by 10% because there's 3 people that didn't show up, I'm not going to get on that roller coaster. We're just going to stay focused. And so there is a lot of freedom in that. And there is very little stress in knowing that, whoever shows up is who needs to hear that today. We have four people online. That's great. If it's 40, it doesn't change, you know, where we're at, but.
Yeah, that's so good. I resonate with a lot of that on many levels. And I've often said too, that I think it's one of the benefits of the Entree Pastor approach, where you are out in the marketplace as well. It gives you another arena to kind of, if you will, take off that pastor hat and just go, my sole identity does not flow out of the work I do as a pastor. Again, when we're unhealthy, like that, when things are going well in the church, you know, we can take credit for more than we should be taking credit for. And then when things are plateaued or declining in the church, we're tempted to, you know, beat ourselves up more than we need to beat ourselves up, because all of our identity is flowing out of the work we do in pastoral ministry. That's not healthy, either one of those places. So for me, I feel like when a pastor can just kind of say, this is not all I am, this is not all I do, I also run this business, or I'm involved in this, you know, capacity out in the marketplace, it kind of gives a different, you know, another thing for me to find. And again, we shouldn't be finding our worth and value in there, but I'm not just defined solely by being a pastor. I think that's what I'm trying to say. So I picked up on that too. When Les said that, there was just kind of a piece about how you shared where you are, where a lot of pastors may be hesitant or feel like they need to apologize for, man, I'm in this small place.
Yeah. And I would just add to that, there's a lot of freedom that comes with having another job that you can say, hey, you know, my family doesn't eat and the power doesn't stay on because I need this job at the church. Yeah. And so loved that 4-day time with you guys. I've actually shared that link for February's with a couple of pastors. I hope they join, because I'm having conversations with those pastors who, man, they're just trapped and they need the paycheck and their church isn't growing and they're slowly dying a little bit. And so to be able to exercise that entrepreneurial spirit and put that hat on, man, it is life-giving. Yeah. And you'd be surprised by the ministry that happens in that world, right? In real estate, you know, 70% of the people that are moving, it's either someone has died, they've lost a job, the aging parents, you know, it's usually something somewhat negative. And so I've probably had more opportunities to pray with people showing houses than I have at church. And so, yeah,
I love that.
It's a good feeling.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the ways you're involved in the marketplace beyond the local church. You've already mentioned real estate, and you're a writer. I do want to talk about your book, but what else? Like, what are some of the other things? Because as Les said earlier, you're an ambitious guy, and we don't mean that as a put down. We like ambitious people that dream big, think big, and are doing things. So what are some of the other ways that you're showing up in the marketplace right now?
Yeah, so with real estate, that's the primary source of income for me. There's also, and I know you had Austin Brooks on your podcast a few weeks ago, I'm a facilitator with the CEO program, Creating Entrepreneurial Opportunities. And that has been just a great opportunity to exercise not just your entrepreneurial giftings, but to pour into the next generation. So if you heard that podcast a few weeks ago, then you know this is for high school juniors and seniors. It's a accredited class through the local community college, and it's all about helping these young students start and launch their own business. So they start out in the fall, they do a class business, and then by spring, they have launched their own business. So that's the other way that I'm kind of connected. And in that, I'm able to coordinate these, what we call site visits and guest speakers. So I am connecting with all of the community leaders and business owners, and I'm arranging opportunities for them simply to share their story to these young entrepreneurs. And I bring my notepad and pen. I'm learning something every day. It's really awesome.
I want to pause on that and make sure our audience heard what you just said, Scott. So again, hands down, if you have not listened to that episode with Austin Brooks and his explanation of this CEO program, go listen to it. But again, if you're listening for the first time, I want you to understand what this is. It's in hundreds of high schools across the country with a vision of, they have a vision now of reaching 1 million students by 2030, I think is what Austin was sharing with me recently. And so your role in this, Scott, I want our pastors that are listening to hear this. You're in a local community at the local level. You're not trying to reach 1 million kids where you are. You are working with your local high school students, and you're also connected with the local business leaders and community leaders. And I want pastors to hear that from a ministry lens. Like, and this, there's income around this. Like, there's a way to, you know, make a little income as you're doing this. But what a strategic role to be out in the community working with the next generation as well as the current leaders of today and being a player in that space. I think for far too long, people have seen the church as irrelevant in the marketplace. Like, and what an opportunity to put pastors front and center in their community. I'm not saying every pastor should go launch a CEO chapter, but I'm saying there are some listening to this who that probably is part of your step forward. You should do this, you know. So anyway, I just wanted to slow you down there and make sure pastors heard that, like how connected you are in the community through the CEO program. And you're, like you said, you're showing up with your notebook. What are some things you've learned, or what are some cool business ideas that you've seen some of the young people come up with, or what are some takeaways that you've had being involved in that CEO program?
Yeah. So the businesses that we have for this year's class, we have one student that has invented a new type of dog leash. We have one student who's doing chrome deletes and blackouts on vehicles. And you have your typical, you know, candle makers and making soap. We've got someone doing an online thrift store. We've had bakers baking cookies, honey, making honey. I mean, it's the whole gamut of options in terms of what is that student, how are they wired, what are they passionate about, and how do you turn that into an income? So that's kind of the cool businesses we've had. We had one student, and again, somebody once told me everybody has a $1 million idea. It's just very few people execute on that idea, or, you know, take it beyond that first level of discouragement. We had one young lady who was diabetic, and so she created a bath bomb with a certain type of salt that diabetics could use. And so there's a niche product. It's very unique, but no one's doing it. And we thought, man, that's an idea that could really take off. So
that's cool.
100%. But as far as what I've learned, my goodness, from the financial side, I've learned that a lot of these small business owners and even some of the bigger businesses, they want to share their story, and they want people to know the story, and they want people to know the difficulties and the failures that they've faced and how they've overcome that. And they really let us kind of peek behind the curtain and really see how the business works. Our students sign kind of a non-disclosure statement. It's almost like these business owners are going to show you the books. They're going to show you the secret recipe. You're going to come in, learn what you can, and then you're not going to, you know, reveal anything that would hinder their business. But yeah, I think for a facilitator, those pastors and facilitators, an important role. I mean, they're constantly looking for facilitators, and they're not finding people that have the flexibility that the pastor might have. Now, it's 5 days a week. It's 7:30 a.m. to 9 a.m. that you're with these students. But imagine, I mean, if you're a pastor listening to this podcast, you've got a heart for people. You might even have a heart for students. You've got a heart for the raising up the next generation, mentoring, discipling. Now, and this is just a whole new opportunity. If I was to say, hey, I want you to spend a year with these 10 to 20 students every day for an hour and a half, I want you to not necessarily be a sage on the stage. I just want you to be a guide by their side, and I want you to help them find the answers to life. I mean, oh, and by the way, you get a stipend for that. We're going to pay you. I mean, it's a no-brainer to me, right? I mean, that's just an incredible opportunity. So
cool.
Yeah, it checks off several boxes in all of our worlds for sure. Well, I want to transition a little bit to your writing, Scott, because you mentioned a few minutes ago your love for storytelling and I'll add to that just your skills as a storyteller. So my guess is that some of that maybe is a part of your personality and makeup, but I would, if I were a betting man, I would wager a lot of it is just doing it. And you have really developed that skill. I've heard you on stage, and then I've also heard with that skill, and I've also seen it in print. And talk to us a little bit now, if you would, about your writing ministry, especially for those people who have some kind of a teaching or preaching platform. What they may not realize is that in many ways, a writing ministry, whether it's books or blog posts or some other kinds of platform for a content, it's just an expression of a teaching and a preaching ministry if we want it to be. And I think yours falls in that category. So talk to us about the book that you have published now that I believe has already been very successful, and then some things that you have in the works, how you see that playing out in the future, because we got a lot of people on here that are very interested in having an expression like that to write.
Yeah, I think it was Mark Batterson that says everybody has at least one book in them. And I remember hearing that and thinking, all right, maybe I do. And so just start writing. And so as a pastor, you've either developed and perfected the art of storytelling, or you need to. Those are the two options, because I think we have the most incredible message in the world that we've been stewarded with. And so to be able to capture people's hearts and attention and then deliver them and take them to a place of response, there's a whole process there of storytelling. And that really didn't become evident to me until, as a campus pastor, I'm trying to just simply connect live worship to dropping a screen down and a message. So knowing what the message was, knowing where the pastor wanted to end up, I just had the opportunity to take some life experience and connect the dots. And so I would just do that in a very subtle way. People begin saying, man, I don't remember what the message was, but I remember you told that story about, you know, seeing roadkill. And I just related to that. And so you hear that enough and you're like, okay, you know, maybe there's something there. And that's really what I did. I just took my stories that I would use, whether I was preaching a message or during announcements, and I just began to write them out. And when I had something inside me that was like, you know what, there's a book in there. And so I think you guys said this, if you hear something three times, you need to pray about it and think about it, because that might be, you know, something worth pursuing. And man, I heard it 100 times if I heard it once. I think the way you preach sounded like a book, you know, the way you taught, that sounded like a chapter in a book. And so I would hear that, and I didn't know what I had or what I didn't have. And I just started writing and putting it down. And I remember giving what I had, you know, maybe 40,000 words, and handing that to a few people close to me and saying, is there anything here? Like, I don't know. I don't see it, but this is kind of what I have. And they really helped me say, oh my goodness. Yeah. This is where, you know, this is where this goes. It's the power of storytelling. I think it was Erwin McManus that said, culture is shaped and created by the ones who tell the best stories. Mm-hmm. And I remember hearing that and thinking, wow, what a responsibility then, right? Because the world tells a pretty good story. The world is getting really good at telling a story, and it's not a good story always. Yeah. And so we have that opportunity to just kind of develop that skill and that craft as a communicator, as a preacher. If you're a pastor, wow. I mean, you've got an audience that shows up every Sunday. Yeah. And they want to hear from God. And your job is to relate that in a way that they get a takeaway. What are they gonna chew on? What's the doggy bag? So stories are a big part of that. What really, just in my short little time as a pastor with that first church, I began seeing where people really embraced through failure or just circumstances. People are so quick to embrace the end to their story, to their ministry, to their marriage, to their business. Like, I just couldn't, it would bother me to how quickly they would give up and just say, you know, I screwed up big time. So I'm done with that. And so it really my passion became, wait. What if it's not the end? Like, what if that's what the enemy wants you to believe? Like, that's the end. But what if this is just an opportunity for God to write an and then to your story? And then I began to look at, man, what do we love about stories? It's the and then in the middle of the story that we love. we love how Rocky Balboa gets back up and Apollo Creed can't believe it. He's like, you know, he shakes his head. We love that. And so really just being passionate about that and challenged to, okay, even if nobody buys this book, what can I leave? And I actually did the math on, you know, if I have seven kids, I know not everybody has seven kids, but if the average person has three kids and then those three kids have three kids and then those kids on and on. And I did like just 100 years worth. So just two or three generations. Right. And so I did the math for me. And in 100 years, I've got like 185 people that could come behind me in the family tree. And I remember thinking, well, even if nobody buys this book, if I just have enough stored away in the basement and one of those kids grabs that book and they read about a story about their great, great grandpa and it points them to Jesus, man, that's a win.
Wow. Very cool.
And so, yeah, we've been able to see, you know, a lot of comments and a lot of people have written in and it's been impactful for them. And some would say even a kind of a turning point to be able to read that and realize that, man, God's not done. This is a part of my story. It includes some sadness, some tragedy, but I have the opportunity right now to be a part of writing the and then, and let's see where God wants to take this. And so that's kind of been the fuel behind that message. As far as what's next, I don't know. I'm still writing stories. I don't know if that's going to be my thing, just kind of a storyteller, or if there's something more there. I have some ideas and don't feel comfortable sharing those yet. But in terms of my econ background and how some of those economic principles apply to ministry and our goal as pastors and reaching our communities, I think there's some overlay there that maybe has been skipped. And so I would like to kind of tease that out a little bit. So that might be something that's coming down the pipe.
Well, if you write it, I'll read it, man. And I genuinely mean that. So I bought a copy of your book after I met you in our challenge a few months ago and was honestly like very, I don't want to say surprised because it's not like I wasn't expecting it to be good, but I was impressed is probably a better word. Like, you're a great writer and a great storyteller, and the story's really connected with me. There's two I'm going to mention, and then the second one will kind of transition us well into maybe where I want to wrap up the interview for today. But the one, we don't need to spend a lot of time on this because Les and I did a whole podcast episode around it, but I'll let you kind of speak to it. You wrote a story about how basically something happened when you were younger in your teenage years where the enemy essentially kind of wounded you or attacked you in the very area where God was going to call you into ministry to kind of create that, you know, sense of doubt. Like, I don't know. And you even mentioned on this interview already, like you were terrified to get up and speak in public. That came from something. I mean, there was something in your past and you wrote about it in your book. And as I read that, like I had this epiphany that, man, that kind of happened to me. And I won't unpack all of that because, again, we just did this in a recent episode and titled it something about turn your wound into a superpower or whatever. But you know which story I'm referencing, and I'll let you just respond to that since you were the inspiration to a podcast episode. So thank you, and what have you to say to that?
No, I loved that episode. I loved hearing your story as well. That was impactful. But, yeah, I think the enemy attacks us right where God has gifted us and where he wants to use us and how he's designed us for a purpose to bring glory to his name. And whenever the enemy can, and the enemy doesn't fight fair, you know that he waits. There's no age limit. You can be young, you can be hungry, you can be hurting, and he just attacks. And so for me, it was a build off of, and I don't know if I mentioned this in my book, but I remember being 10 years old and dad and I going out to pizza and he was going to tell me about the birds and the bees. No idea what he was talking about. But in that conversation, he said, Scott, you're going to be, as you get older, you're going to be able to do the math and realize that mom and I conceived you before we were married. Hmm. And his heart in that story was that he wanted me to remain pure until marriage and just this emphasis of save that part of your sexuality for your wife. And so everything was good. But in that, he said, your mom and I made a mistake. Mm-hmm. And so as a 10-year-old, I remember thinking the message I got, the enemy was saying, and I heard the enemy say, Scott, you're a mistake.
You're a mistake.
And man, that just kind of took root. Here's a 10-year-old kid. He just He doesn't know what he's, I couldn't have done the math until I was like 40. I would have never figured that out. But so I hear that message, and you combine that with a few failures, like the ripped pants, you know, you're in front of this, you're in front of 200 people and it's a youth service, and you had a growth spurt and you rip your pants. And so all of a sudden you choke, you're up there and you're more worried about if they can see your underwear than what you're saying. And you see the chuckles. I don't know if you've ever seen 200 people staring at you, like feeling bad for you, like uncomfortable for you. But for a 13, 14, 15 year old man, it's devastating. Wow. And man, I made some agreements. I kind of spoke a curse over my life. I think I made an agreement in that moment. I will never be in that position again. I'll never speak in front of people again. And then here, you know, when I'm invited by this church to be a campus pastor, all of a sudden, that's what I do. I do announcements, right? And so it wasn't lost on me, the correlation between where the enemy attacked, where I made an agreement with the enemy, and where God wanted to use me.
Yeah.
And so I think that happens all the time.
It's powerful, man. And just, and it's that story that you, that brought it out and that helped me kind of have that little epiphany that like, wow, yeah, me too. I've had a similar experience. One of the things too, Scott, this is just personal, that I liked about your writing, at least in that book and then, is so many of the stories revolved around stuff that I'm into. Les is kind of into this space as well. I mean, I'm an outdoors guy. I like to hunt and fish and those things. So like you write a lot about your life growing up and those moments and memories in Central Illinois. So that for, again, for me, there was just a lot like that connected on a personal level around that. But here's the other story that I'm going to ask you about, and you don't have to go into all of this. People can buy the book. So create a little mystery so they go buy the book. But but this will kind of help me transition to speaking to our audience of pastors that in many cases are maybe a little frustrated with where they are in life, not so much in terms of their calling and impact, but just financially and the, you know, the financial struggles they're in. You had a story about a day a mattress blew off the roof of your car and you're walking back to get it. But really it was more of the conversation that was going on in your mind. And without going into all the details, do you mind sharing just a little bit of that, kind of the takeaway from that story? And then I'm going to ask you to speak to that pastor that may be in a similar place of just feeling like I'm tired of struggling right now where I'm at. So take it away.
Yeah. So you're referring to a story where for us, it was kind of a big deal just to spend $100 on a birthday. We had broke the bank for a $225 kayak for my son. He was 15 years old. I was super excited for him to be able to experience that with him. So as the day is laying out, we're going to spend the day at a lake kayaking. And then there was a family that had bought a house that came with three bunk beds and they were going to give it to our family. And so I had the day all packed out. I'm working up at the barn and I see my brother-in-law pull in to the driveway and he's got, you know, just this trimmed out Suburban and he's pulling a couple of Sea-Doos, black with gold trim. And there's just something in my heart that's like, oh my goodness, I'll never be able to do that. I mean, I as a pastor, you know what you make, you know, the ceiling. Yeah. And that's it. And so you kind of looking at that. And so I remember him pulling in and saying, hey guys, who wants to go to the river? The river's the other direction. I got to go to the lake. I told these people I'd be there at 1 o'clock and I watched my family run out to Uncle Tim and hop in the truck. And my wife say, hey, are you coming? And I'm like, I can't. And I watched them drive one way and I drive the other. And it was in that moment that you just start questioning like, man, you know, think about, I started doing this at 36 to 46. There's 10 years there as a pastor. And I began wondering, like, have I just given the greatest wealth building years of my life to ministry, to watch my kids jump in a Suburban? I'll never be able to compete with somebody else with better toys and better stuff. And so that's where my mind was. And as I'm picking up these mattresses, I pull up in my 77 Ford with the rickety trailer and the guy's there. And, you know, he's got a brand new Silverado with an aluminum car hauler. He's like, Scott, you ought to use this trailer. And I'm fighting this discontentment. And I'm like, man, I got an issue here. I got to figure this out. And I'm loading up these big bunk beds. These bunk beds, they're nicer. They're the nicest beds in my house. Like these were legit bunk beds with box springs. And I'm looking at this and I'm like, wow, I don't know that I'd ever be able to do this unless somebody gives it to me. And then I'm driving home and I start seeing the mattress start to flap a little bit. You got to picture this, you're going down the highway. So I slow down. I'm like, I don't want to, you know, and woof, it just goes flying off. Now I pull over, I'm walking back about a quarter mile. I've got this big mattress over my head as I'm walking down the highway, and I configure it to not blow away. Back on the road, and then the box spring, whew, flies off. It's gone. I pull over. I never did find it. Like, it was in the weeds somewhere, somewhere way back. And so I hop back in the truck, and I'm starting to see pictures pop up on social media of my family enjoying Sea-Doos on the river. And thinking through how this person has just gifted me this incredible gift, and I can't even get it home in one piece. And here's where my mind went. I actually said this out loud. Scott, you don't deserve nice stuff. And I had to catch my breath. To hear me say that out loud, it was like, whoa, what is that? Where did that come from? Right. And I could almost feel myself kind of speaking a curse over my life. Like, there was this moment where, like, I can believe that, and I can kind of live the rest of my life with this understanding. Scott, you don't deserve nice stuff. You're just going to have to settle. Or there's this moment where it's like, I don't think that I want that to be true. And so I remember really taking that to the Lord. Like, what was that? Like, how did that just come out of my mouth? Just me in the truck by myself. And I remember God just kind of saying, listen, why don't you just treat what you've got like it's a lot, even if it's not. And I remember having that that thought, really feeling like, man, that's from the Lord. I wrote it on a sticky note and I kind of put it on my computer screen for several months just to kind of remind me, like, treat what you got like it's a lot. Because it is. Like, at the end of the day, when we can begin to turn our focus to being thankful for what we have, man, God continues to bless and build. And so that's kind of that story. I think that's the one you're referring to there.
Yeah, no, totally. It was the wrong one. I need you to tell another one. No, I'm joking. That was exactly it. So, but I'll tell you, here's what resonates in that for me. Like, yes, I accept your message on, you know, contentment and gratitude for all that God has done. That's a valuable lesson. But I think maybe for me, what resonated most in that is I've been there too as a pastor. I've had those feelings of, you know, I haven't done very well by my family, and this isn't fair. And I think here's where we exist as Entree pastors, is we want to kind of lean into that, but not create some spiritual message around it of, and you're better because of it. You're more holy or righteous because you're this broke pastor. We want to, like, meet you in that place and go, we can help you not be here anymore. And you can still be faithful to God and to your calling. And this isn't about you not being grateful or not being content. But let's help you lean into some freedom and get out in the marketplace where you mentioned the ceiling a minute ago, where there is no ceiling on your earning potential. We all know that the ceiling is there in the pastoral world, and it's going to be good. Like, let's help you get to a place where, you know, you can have some nice things as well. It's not about the things. It's not about a pursuit of money and wealth. It's a pursuit about, you know, it, leaning into the abundant life that God is offering to any of us. It's there for the taking. So anyway, that story really resonated with me. So anyway.
Yeah, and that's why I love what you guys are doing. I mean, think about it. Imagine a pastor who is re-energized around an idea, an entrepreneurial idea that's re-engaged back into the community at a different level. So he's not just wearing his pastor hat. He's got some street cred, both within his congregation and in his community. And if you're an entrepreneur, you're just wired that way. You're wired to know that there is potential, right? Oh. And so when you take an entrepreneur who wants to spread the gospel and make a kingdom impact for his community, and then you put him in a position where he's locked in, and we know the ceiling, an entrepreneur can feel that immediately. And it's just, it can just be like a ball and chain. I hate to say that, but I just wonder how many pastors just need to be given permission to go and pursue an idea. And you know this, and I think that's why you guys are having the success that you're having and kind of striking a chord with so many people. There is something that happens, even if it's not financially you know, $1 million idea. Just the hope, the renewed hope that, man, this is an idea. I wonder if this is a God idea. Yeah. And I wonder if this could provide for my family in a way that I'm not dependent upon these six elders that have seemed to kind of turn on me recently.
Yeah.
You see, I mean, you feel the release and the freedom from that pressure and that tension. I mean, I think it's an extremely healthy place for a pastor to be.
Yeah.
It changes the way you preach, changes the way you shepherd people. Like it's a game changer.
Yeah. Well,
it kind of brings us full circle, John. That's where you started. He gets it.
Yeah, absolutely. He gets it. And I was just going to sign off with one, well, maybe two quick questions. One last question for you though, is speak to that pastor, and you kind of just did right there, but you didn't let me ask the question first, so I'm going to ask the question. You can answer it again, but speak to that pastor that's listening to this today, and that's where they are. Like, what word of encouragement or advice would you give to them, and you know, what would you offer up to them today?
Yeah, I love that question, and I would tell you I've actually answered that recently, and the first thing I would do is tell them to get signed up for your free four days. And that's not a plug. I mean, you didn't tell me to say that. It's just the truth. I think that's such a great starting point for any pastor that's considering, like, where do I go from here? Just the way that you guys set that up and ask questions and get people to kind of process some of that thinking is huge. So that's what I would say. Thanks. And then I would say, spend some time with the Lord and, man, what makes you come alive? Like, what's that thing that you just love? Because I'm going to guess that there's an opportunity there, right? Mm. I heard it said this way yesterday, our site visit. One of the notes I took from our site visits from CEO was, where do people need help and how can I help them? Mm. So in business, it's the same way. What's the need? What's not being met and how can I help them? And chances are there's an opportunity there to make money.
Yeah.
And it's okay to make money. Yep. As I think most of the pastors need to know that.
Yeah.
It's okay to make money.
Yeah, amen.
It's okay to pursue that even for your family and for yourself.
Yeah.
And not feel guilty about that.
Amen. Scott, I've loved this conversation. Where can people reach out and connect with you? One thing too I want to say is you're in our Facebook group, right? Our free Entree Pastors Facebook group. On Facebook?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah. So yes. I just want to invite people to join us there to connect with you. But beyond that, where's a good place for people to go and connect with you and get a copy of your book and all this stuff?
Absolutely. So I'm on social media, Scott A. Kramer. You can go to scottanthonykramer.com. You can pick up a copy of the book. You can also find the book at Amazon or other online retailers. At scottanthonykramer.com, there's actually some resources there. If you're a little pastor, small town pastor, and you're carrying that content creation alone, there's actually, I put up there three messages around the book and then that you, and the transcripts are there and the slides are there, the little videos are there. You can steal that, take it, cool. Put your own stories in there. And there's 3 weeks of a sermon series that you don't have to sweat about. And if there's anything I can do as far as, helping anyone, feel free to reach out. My contact information's on there, the email. My phone number's in the back of the book. So you buy the book, you actually be able to text me or call me directly. But I'd love to help in any way that I can.
Well, there you go. Good stuff from Scott Kramer. Guys, I don't have a lot to say at the end of that other than I'm going to ask you for a small favor as we get ready to sign off this week. And that is this. Here's the call to action. If you are a regular listener to this podcast, and if you receive value from the message and the inspiration and the permission that we're trying to give pastors to believe for more and believe for a bigger, better life that is more in line with who God made you to be, and if you are finding value in that, here's the favor that I'm asking of you. Would you be so kind as to leave a rating and review of this show on iTunes, would be my preference, or Spotify, or wherever you're listening to this podcast? The more that we can have it rated and reviewed by our audience, the more it kind of helps the algorithm and getting it out in front of more people. And so that's just a small way that you can be a part of that. And man, I would be grateful to you if you would do that. So if you've not done that yet, what are you waiting for? Stop what you're doing right now. Pull over on the side of the road and don't go a step further until you have left a 5-star review and a nice little write-up about this podcast. That's not asking too much, is it? I'd be really grateful for any nice review and rating that you would give this show. So that's going to do it for today's episode. Y'all have a powerful Sunday tomorrow as you serve the Lord, whatever that looks like in your ministry context. And we will see you back here for another episode on Monday morning. God bless, everybody.